Hey, what's up, everyone? Welcome back. For those just joining the show, let me tell you real quick what this thing's all about. I started this podcast during quarantine because I realized that I wanted to connect with people on deeper levels. I wanted to explore new worlds, and I wanted to hear different perspectives and learn new things. And that's exactly what I'm doing. It's these conversations that I think are important and what brings me real joy. This is who I am, and this is the casual truth. This week, I had my man, Dr. Brock Tansman, come on the show. Dr. Tansman is a very talented plastic surgeon and just a great dude. Aside from being a great surgeon, it was cool to hear just how wise he is, and it was surprising to me just how much of a therapist and confidant he also has to be in his role with his patients. Please check him out online, see the great work he's doing, and tell people you know about him. Thank you all so much. I hope you enjoy. And without further ado, here's Dr. Tansman.
We don't speak the exact same language. I speak the language of techniques and surgeries and what I can do, move tissue here, take tissue away there, put an implant here, remove something, you know. And I have all that medical knowledge and how it lays out into changing the human body. But they don't have that knowledge. They have knowledge of TV, commercials. So I have to really understand what it is they want, what it is I can provide, and explain to them what I can do for them. And then we have to come to a common point.
Dr. Brock Tansman, thanks for coming on. This is awesome.
Thanks for having me. Absolutely. Great Sunday, Saturday afternoon.
Beautiful, you know,
beautiful
outside.
Beautiful day.
Beautiful. I got to know, what kind of name is Brock Tansman?
So the name is actually, it's Jewish and derivative, Israeli actually.
Okay.
So there's actually a little story to it. So I was adopted as a baby from Costa Rica. So we'll get right into it off the bat.
Yeah, please do.
So yeah, I was adopted as a baby in Costa Rica, about 3 months of age. And my mother and father were from America. My father, adoptive father, was actually born and raised in Israel. So the name is out of, you know, Israeli origin.
Damn.
So that's where it comes from. Yeah. So I grew up Jewish in America. And recently I did get to go to Costa Rica about 2 years ago and kind of see the land that I was from, which is a beautiful place.
Is that kind of
highly
weird?
Recommend it.
I haven't been.
Oh, it's amazing.
It's amazing.
Waterfalls, beaches, rolling hills, mountains, volcanoes.
Is that one of the places that has those black sand beaches?
Yeah, it is one of them. Yeah, there are some down there. There's ones in Nicaragua as well. But yeah, along the Central America, yeah, because of all the volcanoes.
Sure. Is that kind of a weird vibe for you going back, knowing that?
It was interesting. Very interesting, because that was the first time I went back. My father has since passed away many years ago when I was in like elementary school or junior high. So I took my mom there, and that was the first time she had gone back since going and getting me as an orphan. So I was in an orphanage for 3 months. So it was an epic trip, because we just went down and checked out different areas. We tried to find the orphanage I was from, but the records that we had were kind of had a lot of holes in it, so we couldn't find it. But we did visit an orphanage and, you know, talk to them. It was difficult because we have a language barrier. I don't speak Spanish, you know, so I try to learn a little bit, but it's very tough when, you know, people are fluent.
You know, you're a very well-rounded guy. You're very successful, clearly, but without prying too much in the psychology of it, I still want to know, like, is that kind of a mind fuck a little bit when, you know, you're adopted and you go back to the country of origin and, you know, you're trying to find those roots?
Yeah. I mean, it's, I guess it just depends on how you take it. It depends on, you know, everybody's going to take a situation like that differently. I actually was not told that I was adopted until I was 13 years of age. So, you know, in the Jewish religion, you have a bar mitzvah if you're a male, a bat mitzvah if you're a girl, and that's usually in about 13 years of age. So that was when they decided to tell me that I was adopted. And I tell you, that day was a very interesting day. It was a very interesting week to hear that. I mean, it really is one of those things that, you know, it's like your reality all of a sudden changes in like a minute. And it's almost like the floor dropped out from underneath you.
Yeah.
And then you just don't know what to do with it. And you're, you know, 13, you're young, you know, you don't have life experiences. But since then, I mean, I never really thought much about it. Obviously, you know, I'm in the mindset that the adults that raise you are your parents, you know, whether they're your actual mother, father, whether they're an adopted mother and father, whether it's an uncle or an aunt or grandma, you know, I mean, as a child and you grow up, it's whoever provides like guidance and care is really like, those are your parents, you know?
Right.
And you can even be, I guess, if you just extrapolate even further, and if you're, say, raised by a variety of people or a village or a town, I mean, those are all your family. So, you know, you have to think, I think it brings into a lot of like different interesting psychological aspects and ethical things, but mostly, you know, you think it's just, it broadens that concept of what really is family. You know, family can be anybody, you know, it can be friends, it could be like relatives, it can be, you know, community.
I respect that.
So I think it taught me that early on.
So do you feel like that experience that you had, or that realization, or that secret that you were told provided some of the motivation for you to get on the career path that you're on, become hyper successful? Because, I mean, let's call a spade a spade. I mean, becoming a plastic surgeon is certainly no easy feat.
Right. I mean, it definitely takes a long time. It takes dedication. It takes the fortitude to get through it all, and the want to do it as well. So, yeah, I think it definitely did. I always tell people who ask me that kind of question that I feel that as an early point in my life, as a baby, I was given a second chance in life. So if you look at the general population in Central America, many do not come from money. I have no idea what situation I did or didn't come from, but it's very likely that if I wouldn't have been adopted, that I would, you know, finish off being an orphan, you know, until I was like in my 16, 17, however long it would be. And then I would just be, you know, out on the streets or, you know, fending for myself in a third world country in Central America. So I think that, you know, I was given a blessing early in life to do something with my life, you know, other than just being around. So I do that by doing the best I can, and now I can help other people in a variety of ways, whether it's because I became a physician, or there's, you know, there's so many other ways to help people in the world, but this was just my path. And for me, it really was something that I didn't think about early on. It's not like I grew up saying, I'm going to be a doctor. Mm-hmm. It was something that just kind of came together for me. I was good at math. I was good at science. And those types of things just kind of drove me in my direction. And my adopted parents, they drove me, you know, they motivated me. They kept me motivated, wanted me to do well in school. And then, you know, just like anything, you do things in life and doors start to open, and you have to explore those doors and keep forging forward.
What a great answer. You know? So. I didn't expect this personal story from you. I love that you told it.
Yeah. Well, it really is it's my story. It's my colors. So, you know, it makes up who I am, you know.
Absolutely. And there's people out there that will relate to that
100%. Yeah. And more so now as I'm an adult, you know, I can interrelate all these different experiences I've had. I've grew up in Los Angeles. I lived in Ohio for some years. Now I'm in Michigan, you know, here with you guys. So all these experiences, you know, blend into each other and turn people into who they become. And so those are my experiences. So it's 100% my colors.
Isn't that amazing that you started off at one point and you're like now at this future point, and you almost never could have seen that coming. And
just never. Yeah.
Maybe happenstance or whatever have you.
Right, right. No, it really is one of those things that I really think that in life you have to push forward. And as you do that, opportunities will open or be available, and then it's your decision to explore them or not. And then if you do, you never know what's going to happen with them.
Absolutely. So digging into the professional side a little bit more. So where exactly did you do your training, and what types of procedures do you do?
So I did my, let's get back. So what does it have to, you know, what do I have to go through to become a plastic surgeon? Well, you know, you finish high school And like so many people, you go off to college, you do, you know, 4 years of college in undergraduate, and you can major in anything you want. But many of us do biology or chemistry or something of that sort in the sciences, because obviously that's kind of the main derivative. And then after that, you go on to 4 years of medical school. So I did my undergrad in medical school down in Ohio, down at Ohio University. So I'm a Bobcat, if you're familiar with the college. I'm not a Buckeye, which is sometimes very important here in Michigan.
It's a good time not to be a Buckeye, because they just got smoked by Oral Roberts.
Right?
In the first round of March Madness.
Yeah, so, yeah, and we actually won our tournament for the MAC, you know, I guess, in basketball. So that's been all over social media in just the last couple days. So I did those 8 years down there in Athens, Ohio, and then I did my general surgery which is a 5-year program down in Dayton, Ohio, so just down south on 75. And then I came through the Henry Ford system for my plastics, which was an extra 2 years of fellowship after that. And then I actually joined one of my trainers here in Michigan at Child Plastic Surgery, and here we are 10 years later.
God, that's great.
Yeah.
Do you find that when you're training to be a plastic surgeon, do you find that it's kind of like a lone wolf type of training? Because I work in the medical field as well, and I notice that there's orthopedic residents, there's urology residents, there's many different programs and subspecialties of surgery, and I don't notice these bigger groups of, say, plastics residents. So do you kind of feel like you're out on your own there a little bit?
Plastic surgery is a smaller entity of surgeons and doctors in general, just statistically speaking and percentage wise. So so say for orthopedics, you match into that right after medical school. You decide what do you want to do. You go into orthopedics. Most of the time, and historically for plastics, first you have to get into a general surgery program. And then at some point mid-time in your general surgery years, you make a decision. Are you going to stay a general surgeon, or are you going to go off and do plastic surgery or, say, cardiothoracic surgery or vascular surgery? And then those are extra years added on. So the programs are smaller. The amount of residents, fellows that graduate each year are smaller, so the amount of us that are out there in, say, the general physician public is a smaller percentage. So that's why you don't see us in as big a groups, because it just aren't, you know, the residencies maybe one or two people per year versus some residencies in orthopedics or general surgery are 5 to 15 per year.
And so it's that extended training too that I would imagine weeds out a lot of those other candidates, because they're in debt, they're tired, they just want to get out.
They want to get out and work.
Want to make money, right?
Exactly. And I think it's a very different type of field than a lot of the other ones, because we do have a cosmetic aspect to a lot of what we do. And there's actually a very business aspect of what we do. So yes, we are physicians, we provide care. And yes, we take care of patients that are sick or have some sort of medical illness, but we're not taking care of ill patients. We're taking care of patients that maybe have cancer or had the misfortune of being in a bad car accident and now have a mangled limb or, you know, wounds or injuries. So we take care of that. But then there's a whole separate side to what we do, which is the cosmetic field, which is simply a cash for service type of industry. And it's not everybody is into that as well, you know, and it takes a different mindset, because you are now selling medicine in a different way than just saying, hey, you have an injury or you're sick, I can help you. Somebody says, well, I'd like to change something about myself. And you say, well, I can help you. But then you start exploring the psychology behind some of that. And you really get into an understanding your patients and, you know, what they're looking for. And it's a very different mindset to think of medicine as something that you're selling versus something you're providing. And so we have to have somewhat of a split personality where we do the medical portion and then there's the cosmetic portion.
Yeah, I think that's an important distinction to make, because a lot of people, I would say, you know, think that plastic surgery only involves cosmetic, only involves, you know, all the things that you see on TV or that are in the mainstream consciousness, so to speak. But you mentioned an important word, which is reconstruction. So you're fixing people, not necessarily cosmetically, but functionally.
Correct. Right. But there is a cosmetic aspect to it, because you want to fix them and bring them back to maybe the way they looked before or whatever injury it is that they had, that you can kind of provide a healing aspect that maybe they don't have to look at their leg or their face or whatever body part that got injured and see a horrible scar and always remind themselves of, oh my God, this is what happened this day, this year, you know. So you can do that with our surgeries, which is, you know, a concept too. So yes, you are providing medical care, but there is still an aesthetic aspect to it because you need to restore the body's function and what it looked like, the aesthetic of it too.
How stressful does that got to be? How much is that just drive you nuts? Because I'm sure you're a perfectionist, and when it comes to cosmetics, it's I mean, those stakes are so high. I mean, that person looks at themselves in the mirror,
yeah,
19
all
times
the time.
A day.
Yeah, sure, and it's and that's the aspect of the aesthetic versus medical aspect. The aesthetic aspect is significantly more self-evaluated by the patient than somebody who, say, had the unfortunate aspect of being in a car accident or suffering from a medical disease, say cancer or something of that sort. You know, they're happy to be alive. They're happy that, you know, they made it through whatever it was, and then I'm there to help kind of patch them together. But when you really look at the aesthetic aspect, you are operating on patients that they're not sick. There's nothing actually wrong with them. They just maybe don't like a certain aspect of their body that they want changed. So then you need to provide confidence that you can change that in a way that they'll be happy. And that's where really discussing the outcomes and what you can do and what you can't do. And you have to be very honest with yourself on what your own limitations are in the operating room and surgically.
That's a great point.
So that you don't provide some sort of fantasy result that you can't deliver, because
right.
Then you'll have an unhappy patient.
Like these people that come in with a photo of Brad Pitt, like,
right, yeah,
like it's this, and you're like, hey,
you know,
man,
exactly.
You know, so a lot of that is communication with your patients too, and letting them know what their own expectations can be.
It's probably the biggest aspect of it is the communication and communicating one what you can provide for them, because we are limited in what we can do. We're only human. So, and we can only manipulate the body so much. The body will only allow us to change so much.
Sure.
Then it's the communication, the listening part of listening to the patient and really kind of trying to get into their mind to understand what it is that they want, because we don't speak the exact same language. I speak the language of techniques and surgeries and what I can do, move tissue here, take tissue away there, put an implant here, remove something, you know. And I have all that medical knowledge and how it lays out into changing the human body. But they don't have that knowledge. They have knowledge of TV, commercials, friends. We have to somehow find how to blend my knowledge with their knowledge and come to an agreement of what we are trying to achieve. So I have to really understand what it is they want, what it is I can provide, and explain to them what I can do for them, and then we have to come to a common point. And that takes time. You have to talk.
That also infers that there's a psychological factor in there, and do you sense that there's people that you can tell just are how do I put this, never going to achieve an outcome that they have fantasized in their head almost? And so that's where it's important to find that common point, right?
Right, right. I mean, sure, we'd all love to look like Brad Pitt did in Troy, you know, but not all of us can, you know. We don't have, like, a dietitian that, you know, cooks for us 5 meals a day, you know, at the most appropriate time, the most healthy, nutritious.
1,000 crunches a day.
Yeah, we don't have a personal trainer that gets on us about all our exercise. So we just don't have that, and everybody's reality is different, you know. So, yes, it is important to figure out the psychology behind, what it is that they're wanting to do, and B, can we provide that to them? And so, yeah, a lot of people do refer to plastic surgeons as somewhat psychologists or psychiatrists with a knife, because
Wow. We
are changing something to hopefully make somebody happy.
I've never heard that before.
But what's very interesting is you also have to, like, evaluate the patient and just make sure that after you're done making them happy and it looks good, that they will actually be happy, and that that was the reason why they were unhappy, or maybe one of them.
Gotcha.
Sometimes it's not. Sometimes people buy a boat. They think it'll make them happy. Wow. They're still not happy. They have the boat now, but they're not happy.
Wow.
Because it wasn't the real reason why they're unhappy. So sometimes you have to be that psychologist. You have to sit there and talk, but almost be that friend and say, okay, well, I see what it is you're saying, but is this going to make you happy? And sometimes it's not. And sometimes you have to do the right thing and say, well, then we probably shouldn't do surgery because this isn't the problem.
Well,
maybe there's something else you need to explore in your life to make you happy.
Absolutely. And because you provide more of that psychological assistance, do you find that there's patients that kind of cling on to you more, that attach to you simply because they need somebody to talk to?
Yeah, you know, I mean, we definitely, in a very short period of time, like on this podcast, you know, you're going to find out a lot of information. In a very short period of time, maybe in a cosmetic consult is less than an hour or an hour long. We talk about a lot of stuff. Mm-hmm. And so we really sometimes get into some very deep discussions and issues. And so, yeah, that's like anything. That's going to build an immediate, like, human-to-human type of bond.
Right.
And so... I think that, you know, I've had patients say that they do respect when I do turn them away. It's not often, but if there's situations that we just both come to an agreement that surgery is actually not their option, or that type of surgery is not their option, you know, maybe there are other things that they're trying to work out in life and they think this is a way to do it, and oftentimes it's not. So, yeah, we get into some very interesting discussions, and yeah. The patients do appreciate that, you know, because you really establish that human-to-human contact. And I think that's so, so important to, like, establish that and really communicate.
That's great.
Yeah.
I was going to ask you if you had a specific case example of, you know, a surgery you've done where you've changed somebody's life. But I realized through just listening to you talk...
It's all of them.
Every single case.
Yeah. And you can say that for a lot of physicians and a lot of jobs in the world too, but it's very one-on-one, you know, somebody comes into my office and they want surgery. They have to understand that, you know, oftentimes it means undergoing general anesthetic, that they go to a hospital or surgery center, they go to sleep, we operate, they wake up, they're putting their livelihood, their life, their family, the people that depend on them in my hands. Not just for a good outcome, but just for a healthy outcome.
That's mind-blowing when you put it like that.
So, there's a lot of trust. There's a huge level of trust that has to occur, and it's my job to build that trust in a very short period of time.
Wow. So what are these common procedures that you do? What do you find is most common today?
So today, with social media being such a player in everything that we do nowadays, whether it's Instagram, Facebook, or YouTube. There's so much out there. And it's good and bad because it does bring communities together and allows people to communicate and express themselves. But it can be detrimental because sometimes things get very viral. They get talked about a lot and they can influence how somebody thinks about other people, themselves, what's right with them, what's right, wrong with them, what's right with other people, what's wrong with other people. And it's good to talk about these things, but it can affect people deeply. And if they're unhappy with a certain thing and something is brought up on the social media, well, it can make them feel worse about that aspect of themselves or better about themselves, you know, in all different ways.
Have you heard on Instagram, or I should say recently, young girls like their image on filters on Instagram more than they like their own face when they look in the mirror? And so
there's been
a trend of, you know, wealthy young girls who have gotten surgery to have maybe bigger eyes, a thinner nose, you know, more voluptuous lips.
Yeah, so basically what that does is it, you know, they may have already thought that in their mind, but they didn't have a tool in their hand to change it and see themselves in a different light, you know? It would have otherwise just been an imagined view of themselves, like, oh, what would I look like with a smaller nose, or what would I look like with a little bit more rounder of a butt, or this, that, and the other. These filters can allow them to change themselves very easily. I mean, it takes no, like a slide of a finger on your screen, and you can change your waist size, you can change your hip size, you know, all this different stuff. And then they have a visual image of, wow, that's what I would look like if I did this. And so now, all of a sudden, it, in their mind, it's like, okay, this might be feasible. And so it drives patients, definitely. Social media has driven our aesthetic aspect of our business significantly, significantly. And people do come in with filters saying, can you do this? Now, sometimes we can, and sometimes we can't, because once again, we're limited by the physical body, the bones, the muscles. Structure of the body. There are limitations.
When you see your patients for patient consults, though, do you use some sort of iPad where you're able to do essentially the same thing the filter is doing, where you're like, okay, we're going to slim your waistline, or, you know, we're going to give you, you know, bigger breasts.
Right. Some people do. A lot of surgeons do. I personally do not. I think it does give a sense of mishope, you know, same as the filter, because on any computer screen, you can manipulate anything, but you can't physically always do that. So what I do is I use my before and after photos of patients. So patients that have signed consents and allow us to share their images, I can show other patients and say, okay, well, here's a patient with a similar concern before surgery, and this is what surgery we did, and these are the outcomes, and now she's happy. This is something similar to what I can do for you. Then they can see, not on themselves, but on another person, okay, yeah, I like that idea. That would look good. And then they can kind of put it in their own mind. So.
Sure.
But there are programs out there that do that, you know, okay. Whether it's for the face or the nose. Those are the most common programs that people use.
Well, since you mentioned different procedures, I'm sure this is a procedure-dependent type answer. However, what are some of these common questions that you get from your patients?
Common questions. Common procedures that, you know, we are faced with. So from a social media standpoint, one of the biggest things nowadays are things such as the Brazilian butt lift, which is basically a fat transfer. So we take fat cells from one part of the body and we transfer it to another part where, you know, they want, say, like a more rounder butt. So we can take fat from other parts of the body. We use liposuction to suction out that fat, and then we transfer it into the buttock area.
Can they achieve that just through, like, squats and deadlifts, though?
Well, there are, yeah. You can get significant improvement, yes, with a lot of hard work and time. Mm-hmm. So, yes, you can do that with squats and lunges and hip thrusts and this, that, and the other, and enhance the musculature of your buttock, which will give you more volume. But once again, there are such things as genetics that will prevent
Brazilian genetics.
Stop at a certain point. Like you can do, some people can do 1,000 squats and all these exercises for years, and their body will only grow to a certain point. Others, they might genetically be able to grow a bigger back end or whatnot. So it all depends. Where we come in is where those genetics sometimes lack and or the time to do all this, because who really has time to sit at the gym 2 to 3 hours, 7 days a week, you know, and still have a job, maybe provide for a family, children, this, that, and the other. So there are limitations, you know, and part of the problem is with the social media, you might see patients that or people out in the community that they don't have all those other things to worry about, and they can focus on their physical attributes.
You said an important word in there, and that is time. And, you know, I think in today's culture, many people want instant gratification.
Yeah.
And so to have that understanding as well is very important.
That is. And I can provide that because, yes, I can provide a nice flat stomach in one afternoon in surgery. Which nobody can do in a gym or any other thing. But with that comes a price. The price could be financial price. It can be the relative risk of surgery, even though it's very, very, surgery is very safe, you know, very safe these days.
Sure.
And it has been for years. But then there's recovery, there's limitations. And then what people don't think about is there's scars. I'm still human. I can't operate on somebody and not leave a scar. Now I can leave a nice scar. I can leave a scar that's maybe well hidden, that can be well hidden in common clothing, but I can't do things without a scar. And so it's not magic, you know. And people sometimes do come in looking for magic, and I'm not a magician. Still human. Still human.
I appreciate that. I appreciate you don't have the God complex.
Right. But if someday I were to be provided with a wand that I can do things, then that'd be phenomenal. But, you know, I'm not going to turn that down. But it doesn't exist yet.
You know, I was talking to my wife, and I was telling her that I was going to be speaking with you today. And my wife is Korean-American. I've mentioned her so many times on this show. But she was talking about what a huge, I guess, wave of popularity K-beauty is. And so it's very
the whole K-pop.
Yeah, K-pop,
yes,
K-beauty.
There's a lot of stuff going on in Asia.
And they all right, so here you guys do a lot of great things, but what they really specialize over there, my wife told me, is eyelid surgery, thinner noses, and they actually shave the jaw down.
Yeah.
Is there a specific name for that?
No, there are medical names for that. Correct. Yeah. The Asian population in general, whether it's Korean or Chinese, different facial structures, you know?
Right.
Just like depending on where you come from. If you come from Canada, you might look, you know, like Northern Canada, you might have a different, you know, facial structure. If you come from Central America, you might have a different facial structure. If you come from South America or Africa, you might have different. So different regions have different facial structures, and that's totally normal. In many of the Asian cultures, say Korean and Chinese, there is a lot of influence from America. And yes, they have different types of eyelids than we do. So in America, often we have an eyelid that retracts and we have a line over our lid where our eyelid kind of retracts in and creates this like double line.
Like a crease.
A crease, exactly. And a lot of Asians do not have that. And they like that westernized look. So that's what it is. It's a society. It's the general public has pushed for this. And it's probably driven by movies and things that come out of America. And they say, well, we just want to look like that.
Yeah, that's unfortunate in a lot of ways. And there's, I think, a much deeper conversation to have about what society considers beautiful and what those genetics are. Like you're talking about facial structure, right?
Right.
My wife showed me this photo of this beauty pageant from South Korea. It was like a local beauty pageant. It wasn't exactly Miss Korea, but there was like 18 profile photos of young women, all beautiful, and they all had the same face.
Yeah.
It was terrifying.
Right.
But I mean, they were gorgeous, but it's interesting to see how prevalent those procedures are. They all had those narrow teardrop jawlines, you know, thin noses. They had the creases in their eyes.
Right.
And furthermore, it's got to be a makeup effect where their skin was more like Caucasian white.
Mm-hmm.
So when you talk about that Western influence,
right,
it certainly carries overseas.
Right. But, you know, you take it a step further from that even, you know, and me and my partner, we've talked about this because he is Chinese, born and raised in Vietnam. So he has experienced a lot of this. And he actually, we do Asian eyes. He does do Asian noses here in the Detroit area. So we have a lot of influence and knowledge on these topics, and we've discussed it a lot. But what you really look at, and probably why some of these people in these pageants, maybe they look the same and or they look so beautiful, because what it's actually doing is they have maintained some of their natural features from their region, but then they've also, whether via surgery or whatnot, have adopted new features from a different culture. So now you're blending cultures and blending the outcome of mixed people who are of mixed cultures. So just like in the world today, you can have people from very different cultures that get married, have children, and they have beautiful children. They're mixed child with, of different cultures. And now that's an even, you know, it's like a mixed breed of dogs, you know, if you think of it kind of that way, you know. Yes, a German Shepherd is beautiful. Yes, a poodle is beautiful. And each type of animal is beautiful in its own right. But if you can combine them, sometimes the beauty of that is even greater because now you're combining different looks and it's more exotic or different because not everybody's, you know, mixed like that. So it brings a whole different, you know, topic into it. And that's what a lot is happening is because, yeah, they can't change everything about themselves, but they can change certain features. And now they're sort of a mixed breed.
I like that.
A combination of cultures.
I find children between Asian people and Caucasian people to be beautiful children.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And and don't get me wrong, everybody is beautiful in their own right. Whether or not they're all of one type of background or not. But it's even greater when you can combine things, you know.
Let me show you this photo. I found it. I wish I could post it for the people.
Oh, yeah. Yep. Yeah, that is amazing, those are very well-known, beauty pageant contestants, right, from the Korean area.
It's amazing. I wish I could share this online. Maybe I'll throw a photo up on my Instagram. But yeah, it's a fascinating topic and certainly a place where plastic surgery has taken hold, I would say, arguably more than in other places.
Yeah, and more, whatever. Some cultures are more attuned to it and really drive it, you know. So yeah, we have a lot of that in America. You mentioned, you know, Korea, that's, you know, another hot area. But then there's a lot of other parts of the country that it's, or the world, that, yeah, they know it exists, but it's not, the society doesn't really push for it, you know?
Yeah, it's weird, too, because I would say the field is very stigmatized, right? There's Can a be. Lot of negative outlook, but at the same time, if it makes that patient happier, then who's anybody else to say?
Right, that's exactly it, you know? You know, I always, when I talk with my patients, I always push, just generalize health and happiness, of course. But sometimes, even with all that, there are some things that sometimes you want to be able to change. And if you have the means to do it, then, you know, why not?
Sure.
Why not? Within reason, you know? Everything has to be within reason.
Yeah. I'm just thinking about myself, what I'm watching. Right. Do you look at yourself in the mirror and you're like, yeah, you know.
Sure, I think we all do. I think it's only human to look at ourselves and compare and contrast and say, you know, what could we do to change? And it can be very healthy to do that. Mm-hmm. You know, you can say, okay, well, I'm in this job, I do this. What can I do to change? Because I want to do something more, whether it's for my community or for the world or financially. So we're, you know, that if you take that and broaden it, it's always good to have that as a human that you want to change.
Right.
Or that you have the ability to change and right. that you can mold and, you know, roll with the punches, so to speak. But, you know, sometimes it can be detrimental if you get fixated on things that you want to change something and it makes you so unhappy. You could have everything. You know, other people look at somebody and say, wow, they got everything. But they're still maybe unhappy because of one thing that they think is making them unhappy.
That's very true. So it's very wise, too.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff out there, you know. But that's what makes us human, and that's the beauty of it, too.
Sure.
You know.
So we're a little tight on time. I know this has been a short segment.
I
really appreciate you coming on. I have some standard questions I ask all my guests, and I'd love to hear your answers on it. So the way I preface this question is that we're all part of this greater whole that is Detroit, the southeast area of Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
What does Detroit mean to you, working, practicing in this area?
So for me, I mean, part of it, Detroit provided me with my occupation. It provided me with training. So it's provided me with that. It's provided me with food on my table, food for my dog. It's provided me with my dog. What
kind of dog you have?
He's a shepherd mix, and he was actually an adopted
Speaking of mixes.
Dog, right? Adopted. So nice. This all kind of comes full circle. He's adopted. He's mixed.
Uh-huh.
He was found in downtown Detroit, I think the Mexican town area on the side of the road with a broken limb.
Oh.
So, you know, he got rescued from one of these great rescues around town. And So Detroit has provided me with him and, you know, with my life. But I think if you look at it even more so, you know, when I see Detroit, and you see the resurrection of downtown Detroit and just the city in itself, I think it just shows that, you know, people are resilient. And I think Detroit definitely encompasses all that, the resilience of people and the willingness to change in good ways and to grow.
Yeah.
You know, and have hard times and get through it and know that there's good times even during the hard times and there'll be better times. You just got to keep working at it. So
hell
I think
yeah, brother.
Detroit definitely, you know, encompasses all of that to me.
Gets me fired up.
Right.
Love to hear it.
Yeah.
So question number two and the last question is about music. So I think that aside from being in Detroit and having all of us connected in, you know, our geographic proximity that we live, I believe that music is a connector of all people of all stripes. And so my question to you is, what music are you listening to now, or what are some of your favorites?
Well, I'm going to preface that too by saying one of the beauties of things of what I can do and that I get to work in a field where I can listen to music while I work.
So that's a real thing.
It is a real thing. I listen to music while in the operating room. It has always helped me focus. Depending on my mood, it might be different types of music, but it's always helped me focus. I studied with music. And music has always been something I grew up with. I learned piano. I tried trombone for many years, guitar, you know, various different things.
You're a smooth jazz guy, aren't
you? I do like smooth jazz.
Really?
Listen, I like all kinds. I like all kinds of music.
I listen to everything.
It really is. What do I listen to a lot? I listen to a lot of like house, EDM type music.
Okay.
A lot of hip hop, local artists, new artists. I don't get a whole lot into country, but I have appreciation for it and for some of the songs and some of the artists. But listen, I'll listen to everything. I'm really into all kinds of music. Sometimes it's just some like smooth jazz, light piano music.
Okay.
It just really
depends. Do you have any particulars? Any ones that stick out?
I mean, some of my favorite like DJs are like Gareth Emery, Eric Schultz, and then, you know, there's all the like...
My brother would love
all
you,
the hip-hop people. I do love Lil Wayne. He is super fun to listen to.
And do you get nurses in the aura? They're just rolling their eyes at you like, come on, Doc.
I get some that are rolling the eyes and like, I can't handle this stuff. And other ones are like, they love this stuff, you know? And it gets everybody going and it keeps the morale good. And for me, it just keeps me focused. And then we get the job done.
It's energy.
And we get it right. Yeah. It's not a distraction.
Perfect. Yeah. All right, so last but not least, let's get a call to action out there. So where can people find you?
So my office is in the Berkeley / Royal Oak area, right at the corner of Catalpa and Woodward in Berkeley, right across from like the Trader Joe's out there. It's the North Point building right down the first floor. Been there for 10 years. Hope to be there for the next 10 to 20, you know?
Hell yeah. Dr. Barak Tansman, thank you very much. Any parting words?
Nah, this is awesome.
Yeah, this is great. Thanks for coming.
Thanks for having me on here.
All right, brother.
Great. Appreciate it.
You're welcome. Later.
All right. See ya.